Join the conversation.
You're with Kate Talk.
Now, recent concerns around allergic reactions to vaccines have once again raised awareness of the fact that for some people, an allergic reaction is much, much more than just some itchy eyes, a stuffy nose, or a bit of a rash. For those who suffer extreme responses to allergens in food, in drugs, bee stings, and the like, the reaction can potentially be fatal. And seeing as we're in the midst of World Allergy Week, we thought we'd take a closer look today at this phenomenon of anaphylaxis, as it's known, taking a look at its cause and consequences, what to do about it if it happens to somebody who is with you. We will address the vaccine issue a little later in the conversation as well, I promise. It is always a pleasure to welcome pediatrician and allergy specialist Professor Claudia Gray to the show. She's an executive member of the Allergy Society of South Africa. And welcome back, I should say. Lovely to have you with us, Claudia.
Thank you, Pippa. Thanks so much.
Let's start with some of the basics. Is anaphylaxis simply an extreme version of an allergic reaction, or is there more to it than that? How is it actually defined medically?
Yeah, so Pippa, that's a great start. I think most of the listeners will know that allergic reactions can come in quite a spectrum of manifestations. So they can be milder skin reactions, gut reactions, vomiting or tummy cramps. It can be runny eyes, runny noses, itchy skin. Mm-hmm. But then on the more extreme end of the spectrum, you can also have respiratory difficulties. So difficulties breathing in or wheezing when breathing out, or a persistent cough. Or if you're extremely unlucky, sort of cardiovascular involvement, so collapse, loss of blood pressure. Now, by definition, anaphylaxis is life-threatening. So there are three circumstances under which you think, uh-oh, this is anaphylaxis, I need to take action fast.
Okay.
The first circumstance is if there are two or more systems involved. So if someone, for example, is peanut allergic and they get an itchy rash and then they also start vomiting, so that's involvement of the skin system and involvement of the gastrointestinal system. So that's already severe. And secondly, if there's any chest or respiratory tract involvement. And thirdly, if there's any cardiovascular involvement, so dizziness, collapse, loss of pulse and blood pressure. So those are the circumstances under which we term it anaphylaxis.
Okay, thanks for that explanation. Now, you've mentioned a lot of the initial symptoms there already, but can you talk us through what are the early warning signs that somebody is potentially having an anaphylactic reaction?
So some people are unlucky and have almost an immediate respiratory difficult or immediate collapse, but this is less common. Usually you are right. Normally it starts on a spectrum where you start thinking, whoa, is this person reacting? So itchy mouth. An itchy palate, thinking, oh, this doesn't taste quite good. There's an itch in my mouth. Maybe a rash starts appearing on the face, little hives. Often in children, we often see withdrawal. So they become very clingy and irritable and start crying because they're not feeling well. In adults, it can be described as a feeling of impending doom. So often we have rashes and then gastrointestinal symptoms, so retching, feeling nauseous, vomiting. And then that itchy throat can progress sort of to progressive clearing. So, you know, the patient just has these short little staccato coughs, but they look okay. But that's certainly a warning sign. And I've seen that in my practice when little kids are having challenges and you think, oh, it's fine. They're just clearing their throat. But 1 minute later, they've got a full-blown wheeze.
Yeah.
So often these milder signs, the itching, clearing of the throat, are a sign that greater things might still come.
I think it's really important to remind our listeners that that can progress over quite some time, because I think a lot of people have the misperception that if you're going to have that severe reaction, it happens almost instantaneously. Sometimes it can be up to an hour for these symptoms to develop. Not so.
Yeah, so by definition, anaphylaxis is caused by what we call immediate type reactions, or the scientific term for that is IgE-mediated reactions, because they're mediated by an antibody called your IgE. And by definition, those reactions occur within 2 hours of exposure to your allergen. So whereas more often than not, we start seeing some warning signs very soon after the ingestion of the food, for example, that we're allergic to, sometimes the absorption of the food is delayed because they've eaten a very fatty meal, for example, and sometimes people only present after an hour or two, well after the ingestion, where you've kind of forgotten about it. use it, that you suddenly are getting an itchy throat, itchy rash, feeling nauseous. So by definition, up to 2 hours, yes, Pippa, although more commonly earlier than that.
Okay. Now, let's talk about some of the most common triggers. You've mentioned peanut allergy. I think that's one a lot of people will be familiar with. But it's not only to do with things that we eat. There are certainly common food allergens. There are some in medications we need to be concerned about. There are also insect-related ones. What are typically the more common ones?
So you've already described a couple of groups there. And in fact, in adults in South Africa, the most common cause of anaphylaxis is, in fact, bee stings to the African honeybee. In European countries, it's actually more commonly the wasp. So those are insect stings. In terms of medication, the classical one that people know about is penicillin or the penicillin groups. But the listeners do need to be aware that only about 10% of people who think they have a penicillin allergy are truly allergic.
Really?
So please go and have that. Yeah.
Okay.
Please go and have that checked out properly. People are often mislabeled as penicillin allergic. Some people react to non-steroidal anti-inflammatories. This morning I saw a gentleman who had had a terrible reaction to codeine. Some people react to some of the general anesthetic agents. So those are the drug groups. Mm-hmm. In terms of foods, now food allergies are interesting because universally all over the world, certain food allergens are our troublemakers and literally cause 95% of allergies. And these are cow's milk, hen's egg, soya, wheat, peanuts and nuts, and the seafood group. But then some countries have local variations depending on their geographical patterns and their food intake trends. So sesame seed, for example, is a big problem in Israel. Mustard is a big problem in France. And the peach, something called an LTP allergy, is very common in Spain and other Mediterranean countries. So you need to be familiar with your geography and what's most common there. Certainly in South Africa, in our childhood population here, egg, peanut, and milk are the most common allergens. It also is age-dependent, so little kiddies can react to that whole spectrum, but things like egg and milk and wheat and soya allergy are commonly outgrown, so they're less common causes of anaphylaxis in adults. So food allergies in adults that cause anaphylaxis, your peanuts or your tree nuts, and any your shellfish and sometimes the lionfish as well. So it's very much age-dependent and also geography-dependent to a certain degree.
For those who might have joined us late to the conversation, my guest on the line with us is pediatrician and allergy specialist Professor Claudia Gray, talking about anaphylaxis, the really severe allergic reaction, which can, if left untreated, even lead to death. Now, Claudia, we must talk about the vaccine issue. A lot of people worried about this. There have been some examples of anaphylactic reaction to the COVID-19 vaccine worldwide, a very small number when you look at the millions and millions of doses that have been administered, but enough for there to be a cautionary that if you are prone to having severe reactions, you need to be careful about taking it. Do you want to just tell us a little bit more? I think we're not yet entirely sure what ingredient it is even that people are reacting to.
Yeah, you're quite right. So I think as an overriding initial comment, I'll have to say that the benefits of the vaccines far outweigh the risks. And the risk of the vaccine is far lower than the risk of COVID. So just to put it in perspective. Okay. In terms of reactions to the vaccines, they've tended to be sort of three groups, really. The first is a very common reaction to a vaccine that you get a bit of a fever, maybe feel a bit lethargic and pup for a few days. And that's a normal reaction because your immune system is mounting a response. It's almost like it's about to get the flu, but they never quite get the flu. So that's a normal reaction. The listeners, we need to be aware of that. That's not dangerous. That's a usual reaction to a vaccine because your immune system is working hard to create those antibodies. The second group of reactions you mentioned are the allergic reactions, so involving your immune system, possibly causing anaphylaxis. And these are exceptionally rare. So there really have been very few cases worldwide. And it's important to know that the COVID-19 vaccines do not contain food particles at all. So if you're allergic to egg or if you're allergic to cow's milk, you're not at danger of having a reaction to the COVID-19 vaccines. If you've got asthma or allergic rhinitis, you are not at particular danger of having a reaction to the vaccine. So the people we are warning to take care are those who have previously had a reaction to a vaccine. So not to foods, not to era allergens, but to previous vaccines. So those who've possibly had anaphylaxis or severe spectrum allergies to vaccines. And also those who are possibly allergic to certain of the ingredients like the polysorbates or polyethylene glycol. So those people need to be looked into more carefully. But this is exceptionally rare, Pippa. Mm-hmm. And if people are worried, they do need to see their doctor. The doctor can run some tests and reassure them of the safety of the vaccine. And I've had quite a few people walking through my door for assessment of possible risk. And a lot of them we've been able to reassure. And sometimes we just also give them a preloading they take an antihistamine and maybe a cortisone an hour before. But the listeners do need to know this is exceptionally rare.
Okay.
The third sort of group of reactions are, of course, the clotting reactions, which are more common than the allergic reactions.
Okay.
And this has caused really quite a lot of hysteria. Also, it needs to be put in perspective. Your chance of having blood clots are tenfold higher if you get COVID than if you get the vaccine. They are much higher by just taking the oral contraceptive pill than having the COVID-19 vaccine. They are infinitely higher if you're a smoker than if you take the COVID-19 vaccine. Your chances of dying are much higher by getting into your car and driving home than taking the COVID-19 vaccine. So I think people just really need to put it into perspective.
So one of our listeners has SMSed me with a very, very good example of somebody who has a good reason to be concerned. Bella says, I years ago had a flu jab and landed up in hospital with an allergic reaction. And the hospital had to administer adrenaline after my heart stopped. I'm now 77 years old and I haven't had my COVID vaccine because I am very nervous about this. And Bella adds that she is allergic to penicillin and codeine as well as some food items. So that's a really clear example, Claudia, of what you've just been saying, somebody who does need to be careful to have a conversation with their doctor about weighing up the risk-benefit profile.
Absolutely, Pippa. So that is a real example of somebody who needs to take care, and then we weigh up the risks and benefits of the vaccine. And often in those cases, apart from pre-dosing them with things to sort of reduce their immune response, we also do it under strict observation and often give a test dose before. So give a tenth of the vaccine, and then we wait 15 to 20 minutes before giving the rest of the dose, and they have to be strictly observed for at least an hour afterwards. Mm-hmm. So we do need to take special precautions with some people, but I would like to reiterate that this is excessively rare.
Thank you for that. Right, Liz, we've got a caller on the line with a question. Sally in Rondebosch, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Thank you for running this conversation.
Sure.
Bizarrely, last night I was with my adult daughter, who's 26, and she had a strange reaction. And listening to you, I'm thinking this could be what it is, and I wonder if you could confirm it. She, about an hour and a half after dinner or so, she suddenly became unwell. The first symptoms were that her hands were burning and itchy. She then developed a rash on her chin and her feet and then started to vomit. And she was desperately pale and very sort of low blood pressure sort of indication. Mm. Would that have been an anaphylactic reaction?
Okay, Sally, obviously Claudia can't diagnose a patient over the airwaves, but Claudia, those symptoms do sound like they tick quite a few of the boxes you mentioned.
Yeah, so Sally, this is interesting because by inference, if you were surprised, it suggests that your daughter's never had an allergic reaction before. So, the doctor in me would love to know what she ate because there are some allergies that can have their onset in adulthood. Mm-hmm. For example, the nuts, the seafood group, and the preservative group are the ones that more commonly have their onset in adulthood. We also have a very interesting type of allergy called alpha-gal allergy, which is actually an allergy to red meat, which typically presents quite a bit later, only once it's been absorbed through the lymphatic system. So that typically presents only hours later. That's something else to consider if she was eating a big steak. But certainly that combination of symptoms does sound concerning, and it does sound like she needs to be evaluated, yes.
Okay, thank you for that. Sally, good luck. I really hope she does get someone to help her identify the cause there. Professor, that leads us to the issue of what you do if somebody is having this kind of reaction and you realize that they are in distress. I think a lot of people know that someone who's diagnosed with a severe allergy is advised to carry an EpiPen with them. That's one of the strategies. What else would you like to mention?
Yeah. So I think the first bit of that, the answer there, is that it's incredibly important if you've suspected that you've had an allergic reaction or that your child has an allergic reaction to get it properly assessed by ideally an allergist if possible, or your pediatrician or your physician, so that you know exactly what to expect in the future. A child, for example, with a peanut allergy also has to be assessed for, you know, related allergies. I always say, you know, the peanut has many friends. Mm-hmm. It's also friends with the tree nuts. It's friends with the sesame seed. It's friends with egg. It's friends with legumes. So you need to, first of all, do a comprehensive panel to find out exactly what your pattern of allergies is, so that you don't get caught out by surprise when you're a peanut allergic patient and you suddenly eat a sesame roll and have an anaphylactic reaction. So number one, if you've had a reaction before, have it thoroughly assessed, ideally by a specialist, so you know exactly what to expect in the future. And then to mitigate risk, you obviously do very strict label reading, etc. If somebody in front of you, say, is known to be peanut allergic and they eat a curry which happens to have peanut sauce in it and they start reacting, recognize early. So be aware of the signs of allergic reaction. Be aware of the two-system involvement in anaphylaxis. If it's a milder reaction, so say just a skin rash, then a quick-acting antihistamine, such as cetirizine, will work in the majority of cases, so that you should be carrying on you in your little anaphylaxis pack. Mm-hmm. If it indeed becomes anaphylaxis, so two or more systems or respiratory or cardiovascular involvement, then adrenaline, you are quite right, is life-saving. So if the patient has been previously seen and assessed and has an emergency pack with an adrenaline auto-injector, that needs to be given as soon as possible. That can be absolutely life-saving. If the person has never had an allergic reaction before and you're suspecting an allergic reaction, give antihistamine if you have it, but if they're showing signs of anaphylaxis, call the ambulance and get them to the nearest emergency unit, because they will need adrenaline, which might be life-saving.
We have to leave it there. Thank you so much, Professor Claudia Gray, for joining us today and sharing that really helpful and important information. I just want to mention that there is a great website if you need more information about anaphylaxis or you have a question that we didn't get to today. It's allergyfoundation.co.za. Professor Claudia Gray is a pediatrician and allergy specialist. Very grateful for your input today.